This podcast is supported by JBS International Incorporated through a grant award from the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, with 0% finance with non-governmental sources. The contents are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement, by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government. For more information, please visit HRSA.gov.
Welcome into another episode of Rural Roads, the Hardcore Podcast, where we discuss the stories, individuals, and everything else within the Rural Communities Opioid Response Program. I'm your host, Tim Rabelt with JBS International. Before we get into it, just a quick reminder on some of the ways you could stay connected and informed of all the latest Hardcore information, updates, resources, and more. As always, you can visit the Hardcore TA portal, check out the new modules on the LMS, and keep up with the monthly newsletter and weekly roundup emails. You can also follow us on social media by liking Hardcore TA News on Facebook and following Hardcore TA on both Twitter and Instagram. In today's episode, I sat down with Kyle Perkins and Timothy Petro from Horizon Health down in Kentucky. They've researched and implemented one of the more unique rural transportation solutions in order to best connect individuals with services in their areas. Let's listen in.
Welcome in. We got another great episode for you folks today. Thanks for tuning in. I'm joined here by Tim Petro and Kyle Perkins from Horizon Health. Thank you both for joining.
Hey, Tim. Good to be here.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, appreciate it. So we're talking rural transportation today. Some of the good work that you all have been doing. I was just actually bragging about it to a couple colleagues beforehand. So you're on delivering a good podcast episode today. But Kyle, I actually want to come over to you first. If you could give a bit of a overview of your role, the work that you all are doing, and then maybe a bit of the history as it pertains to this kind of innovation that you all have explored. So we'll jump to you first, and I'll come over to you, Tim, after that.
Sure. Thanks for having us today. We're excited to share with you, Tim, the opportunities and the challenges that we've experienced with transportation in particular. Give you a little history about Horizon Health. We started providing services in 2019 in a MAT environment, so medically assisted treatment with counseling. And the core of our program really was to eliminate barriers to care and try to bring a lot of services under one roof to those folks that needed it. Early on, what we realized was there's a huge barrier in transportation. I think most of your listeners would agree that this has been a challenge from day one in any organization that's providing services to our client population. The issue that we ran into was twofold. Number one, getting funding. We pay for it and all of that through Medicaid. The state of Kentucky, which is where we're located, has some barriers of their own. It's a broker system. And so there are six specific brokers throughout the state. And what we realized was we had to go through them in order to bill for services. And so that presented its own set of challenges. What we'll be discussing today a little bit is how we met those challenges. And Tim will be able to delve into that a little bit more. But I'm happy to say that our corp and Health Resource Service Administration has heard of the voices of all of the folks participating in that program. And we're now seeing funding through some of the grant opportunities that are out there. So we've been privileged to be able to receive funding for equipment. That's the first step, is get the equipment. And then secondly, how do you implement a transportation program of all of the, again, opportunities and challenges that you're presented with? And Tim will be able to really go into that a lot more in detail.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you, Kyle. And we had you as the featured grantee at the start of the year, I think in January, and we had the Ask a Grantee session. And I know it's off topic a little bit, but could you talk just a bit about, there's a lot of stuff you covered there, but I think one of the main reasons we wanted to get you on there was that child care center. Could you just talk a bit about that, the state certified center that you all had set up?
I'm happy to do that. You're right. In January, we were highlighted for our efforts in bringing childcare into a MAT environment. It was a little bit of a challenge when we decided to get state licensure for that. The state of Kentucky came in. They've been tremendously resourceful in helping us get that started. But on first impression, was they said, you want to do what? You want to open up childcare in a drug treatment facility? And we said, yes, that's exactly what we want to do. And from there, we worked hand in hand with our Department of Child and Family Services and are now one of their premier childcare facilities in our part of the state. We're getting ready this fall to open up two more facilities in our treatment facilities in Williamsburg and one coming in Gray, Kentucky. Our clients have been very responsive to this. It is a daycare facility that's open not only to our clients, but to the general public. When we talk about barriers to care, again, what we found was that many times clients would either defer or postpone treatment entirely because they had no one to sit with the children.
Sure.
Yeah. So what we're able to do is to take the children over into a secure area of the facility while the parent is going through their counseling session and their provider encounter and then receiving other services such as targeted case management and so forth. Tim, since we talked the last time, we also have an employment services program where we counsel with folks on and employers on connecting our clients with jobs. And I'm happy to say that we put over 200 individuals back to work in the last.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, thanks for sharing some of that insight. And I hope we're not getting too confused saying Tim twice on this panel, but at least you have one sitting right next to you. Tim, we'll pop over to you. How would you describe your role with an organization? And if you could just share your title and the kind of work that you're focused on for folks that are tuning in.
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. Title is Director of Transportation, but more or less really my role, what you could say, is developing the whole framework to make it work. Just through, there's been a lot of trial and error, burning by fire, but we're figuring it out. We've still got a long ways to go, but we know what tools we have in place right now. We know the direction we need to go to make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. So the rest of the time, I just want to have you walk us all through some of the different pieces, like the initial barriers, how are you going to sustain it, what it currently looks like, what it might look like moving forward. Maybe we can start a little bit with the barriers, like the kind of obstacles you ran into as you're exploring the different options and the different parts as you've built it out and learned what you might not have known. And Kyle gave a little bit of the history of the problem, but yeah, what were some of those initial obstacles that you run into?
Yeah, I would say probably everybody that's tried to start out with transportation has probably went down this road too and discovered the same thing we had. When Kyle was referring to the regional broker system, you know, a lot of people call it the non-emergency medical transportation, and that there are a lot of barriers. And so each broker, they actually carry out their own guidelines and rules that each one in that region has to follow. So each broker can have different requirements to get started. So for us, we had to have 3 drivers, 3 vehicles, register with the state. It was a 6-month application. And at the end of the day, our problem, even if we did go down this route, was we're trying to provide the transportation to our patients. But to affiliate with that regional broker, you know, we didn't know what that list of these patients that need transporting, where they were going, where they were coming from. We could be transporting patients for other people's clinics or facilities outside of our own altogether.
So I think what we found out was that we actually became part of the broker system. We would have to assign our units to the regional broker, and that we were then at the discretion of whatever calls came into the broker. So our intent, as Tim described, was really to provide service directly to our clients and not be available to just the general public.
Yeah. Our whole mission really is just, you know, for all in-house, because, you know, that leads us to the other barriers. Outside of transportation, the patients that we have, the way I believe Kyle and all that has set it up to begin with is, you know, every patient comes in on the same day of the week, same time. That way there's no confusion about setting it up or them forgetting the date of the next appointment. But even with that, that would work for transportation as well. So even for us, communications are definitely our biggest problem.
With the client.
The client, yeah.
Many times what you find out is the client, even though they have a static daytime appointment, Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and they request transportation, our transport unit, along with our driver, arrives and they don't come to the door. They're indisposed. They're not at home. And then about an hour or two later, they call and say, "Hey, sorry, I missed the ride. Can you come and get me?" So logistics has been a real challenge. And we're just now, Tim has gone through multiple online demonstrations of software. What I would definitely recommend is that you, number one, partner with a good software routing system. And we have found one. I think we're going to go through and get it all implemented first, but we've done our due diligence to find a nice logistics software package that I think will handle our needs. The other thing I think, Tim, you'll probably agree, is has been, how do you pay for this program, right? Because obviously the grant funding starts you out, but from there, you want to build a sustainable program. I think we've come up with an innovative approach. And what we do, we checked, of course, the regulations for our state, and we use peer support specialists as drivers. So this can be billed for this service. Let me say it this way. We don't bill for transportation. We bill for peer support encounters. And according to our legislation in our state, we can bill for that. So now what we have is we have a program that is sustainable. So the peer support specialists, these are, of course, individuals in recovery from SUD or other mental health conditions. And we provide those clients who are suffering with social and emotional support as we're driving, right? That's how we look at that. Now, that requires internal administration.
To branch off that, to really take it in, you would want to be in the vehicle with our peer support and the patients that are in there.
Right.
It's a full-on counseling session on the way they're back, just support. It's real enlightening.
Yeah. I think it's actually provided better support than just meeting in an office or so forth. So we're real happy with the way that's turning out. I will tell you that from the financial side, again, it's important to watch the billing for this, because it can only be done, at least from the Medicaid standpoint, in 15-minute engagement units, right? So determining your total resources available in time from the peer support side, and then looking at your routing and how many individuals need transportation service, I think is critical in your initial planning.
Yeah, thank you for that. What's like the average length of a ride of a transport?
Yeah, that's a good point. And there's a reason why we're doing that, and it will change as we grow. But so we can do it, and we can only bill out for 60 minutes. So that's 4 units per patient. So if we do 2 30-minute trips, that's 4 units, and we've maxed out for that one patient. So we're trying to keep our drive time as a 30-minute one way. Mm-hmm. And then as they're going back, that's another 30-minute drive. So we've got all 4 units maxed out. But that 30 minutes is a long stretch from the clinic just to go get them and bring them back. But so we've also got the clinic in, so we have the one in Williamsburg and the one in London. We're capturing everybody in that 30 minutes period.
Yeah, it covers our whole geographic. And I think, too, that's where your software, Tim, will come in for your listeners, is to really do the research on software that's going to be able to help you map this out. And we're creating zones which fit within that time requirement. Tim and his team are working on building that zone now and building all the database within the software package itself. I have a long history in logistics and logistics planning prior to my role here. And I can tell you that the first thing that we talked about was we're going to need some routing software. And it certainly proved to be the case early on when we just put the route driver out there, the peer support out there with the equipment, proved early on that, boy, we're going to need some way to manage this, right?
Controlled chaos.
Yeah. Other than a pencil and paper kind of thing.
You got to keep in mind too. So these 15 engagements, we can bill out almost $9 per engagement. And we can do 120 units total for the peer support. That's as many units that they can bill out for in that week.
Gotcha. In a nutshell, how would you describe what the software allows you to do or enables you all to do? Is it like the hub? Like it's everything?
Yeah. So when we got into looking, when we think of software, there's multiple ways to think about it. So there's routing software. That's a fixed route. You plug it in A to B. The only problem is with that is when you've got your whole day planned out with these fixed routes, one doesn't show up or one's late, it messes up the entire day. And they're calling the front desk. We got to call the provider, the counselor, to make sure that time's going to work for them. Then they're going to call, get with the dispatcher, get with the driver. There's too many interactions just to make that route happen. We tried that. It went down pretty fast. There's also schedule software, but that doesn't account for any kind of routing. That just locks in a time. So we tried another instance where for us, that would be considered more like a fixed kind of wave schedule. You could say like they're in zones or times, but that didn't work out as well either. So for us, what we try to do is try to find something that combined the scheduling, fixed routes, on-demand trips, dispatching all by itself. Are you familiar with like how Uber works as a
sports? Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Just leverages like on-demand ride hailing. But you know, for us, it eliminates all the channels of miscommunication. So when a patient could call in for a trip, our dispatcher would get it. He'd plug in the trip. He could plug in fixed routes, but he could also add in on-demand trips. That's our problem is a lot of our patients would not have phones. They would just walk to the clinic, but then they needed a ride back. They wouldn't show up on time. They would call in after their visit. Can you come get me? We would go get them. We'd beep the horn. Nobody'd come outside. An hour later, they call us again. We're right back. So we're trying to find something that streamlines everything without all the phone calls. So the program we got right now is called TripShot. We're looking about 4 weeks before it's implemented. It's remote. Their team gets with us before it's officially launched based on what our needs are. It's a web-based dashboard that allows either a receptionist or a dispatcher to quit, request, manage, and automate the route. And it does it all at scale. So our zones could be adjusted on the fly at any time. So what we're trying to do is eliminate all the channels of miscommunication. So if they are calling in for on-demand trips, our dispatcher plugs those in and it goes out to the closest driver that's in route. There's no dispatching involved. Our dispatcher, you can call him a dispatcher, but he just plugs in the route. So he's got his fixed routes. He's got his on-demand ones. So one driver's driving a patient A and the other driver's driving a B. Another ride comes in that's on patient A's route back. When dispatcher plugs that route in, it automatically goes straight to the one that's picking up A to pick him up on his way back.
Yeah, I think
so. It's deciding who's being picked up in the route.
I think in summary, what we're looking at is we needed more dynamic software than what Tim first encountered, which was either scheduling, fixed routes, that sort of thing. And through his research, he came up with this TripShot software. And basically, it allows, I call it one-way Uber. So the client really can't call in and say, you'll come get me right now. It's more or less, if I understand it correctly, it's more or less that they would call the dispatcher. The dispatcher would make that determination. Is this a legitimate pickup or what? Yeah. So we eliminate the client trying to make that reservation. We do filter that out through dispatch. And as Tim described, it's much more dynamic than anything we found so far. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
And that for those on demands, we still can do that now. But it does get a little bit of filtering on the front end. And if we have a situation, the dispatcher also has access to the schedule to see if there's a provider available, a counselor available for these missed appointments, or are we picking them up at the end of the day? What are we doing? One of the other things that I like really well about this particular software is that we can cut the day off at a certain time. For instance, if we have a client calls in at 3:00 in the afternoon, that may be beyond our ability to get the driver out and back within their scheduled day. There's just a lot of functionality to it, more than we found with anything else. And so we as they say, pulled the trigger on that. And Tim and his team are working with the software engineers on that side. And the good news is this is an off-the-shelf, quote-unquote, package that just requires the data parameters to be input. Everything else we found seemed to be in development, so we would always have to contact the software engineers to have them incorporate in their code, this is what you want. So very expensive on that end. TripShot was very economical, which was something we were looking for. And
sounds like a bunch of startup initial costs. What are some of the ongoing variable costs? Obviously, everything tied to the actual vehicle, driver, the software, upkeep, things like that. What else are you anticipating as those different kind of...
As you can imagine with any, basically the ongoing costs are what you would imagine, the cost of the vehicle, tires, oil changes, labor, the overhead of the department, transportation division. Here's the challenge that I've thrown at that team is that if you maximize those units that peer support has available, you will more than pay for the program and there will be a surplus. So it's really all about efficiencies and making certain that peer support specialist is maximized for transportation. And the revenue then from that billable revenue will more than pay for the equipment and all of the costs associated, including insurance and et cetera. And the software, by the way.
Yeah. So more on that software too, because I know I'm like leaving little things out on it. So it works off of an algorithm that updates every 5 seconds. So it knows where the driver's at and what patient we need to be picked up or dropping off. So it's automatically deciding every 5 seconds, it may change that driver's route the next 5 seconds. So it's meant to be efficient and as biggest ride share that it can. So it's going to be transporting most of the time more than just one person or on its way to drop one off. It's picking one up en route to come back. So we don't route it at all. The program does it all for us. So it streamlines that and on us.
How does that work with the aspect of like an individual with a peer and that kind of experience during the ride as there's multiple people?
Yeah, really, there's not really more than two people in the vehicle at a time. And they're not usually in the vehicle together all the time unless they're both leaving the clinic at the same time. But yeah, they interact pretty well with each other. Almost like they've jumped within the van. They've just created a bond with each other. How's your day going? What's going on? They like talking about fishing an awful lot. I've noticed that.
That's calming.
Yeah.
the focus that we're putting on software, I don't think can be understated. And I know we've talked a lot about that, and your listeners are probably thinking, boy, that's a lot to talk about with just software, and we're talking about transportation. The software is really to building the program.
Yeah. And that's to say, because we can't control the times that we will never be the fixed time we said that we were going to be there. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Jumping a little bit into the current operations now, what's it look like today? Is there a ride happening, you know, right now, for example?
Yeah, Mondays are typically our slower day, so I'm glad you said that. So the volume that we have right now, and this goes back to the Medicaid broker system, only about 5% actually use that service. So for us, between both clinics, we're 15 to 20%. So that's a huge jump, even if we were to even try to do that broker system like. The only way to make it sufficient is to have two drivers in each location. That way, one's in, one's out. You'll never be efficient with just one in each location. So the amount of volume that we have at 15, 20%, we can scale that for, let's call it our Williamsburg location. We stack everybody 2 days a week. And it works out great because our London patient base is so much higher that it's going to be about three times that amount. And it works out great. As we scale before we go to the next location, we're going to be doing 3 days a week, and we're just going to stack everybody that needs transportation on those days. And we know that they're not going to show up on time, but we're going to be in and out all day long.
So we're basically, I think what's encouraging is even with the system that we have in place, which is really a manual system right now, we're averaging 30 to 50 trips in a week at our smaller facility. And we've pulled the reins back on that a little bit simply because we've run into these logistical issues that could present us with a more of a chaotic environment that no one really wants. We want people to buy into the service. We want our staff to feel confident that when they do go out to pick up a client or deliver a client back down, that it's going to be smooth, uninterrupted with any kind of problems and so forth. We're going to be launching our London facilities transportation side here in the coming weeks. And then probably in the fall, I would think, we'll have our third location up and running with transportation. Now, if you can imagine, as Tim described, we figured out early on that we really needed one transport out picking clients up and one transport delivering clients back home. That requires, at a minimum, two vans, two people, right? But if you look at the program as it develops, the more vans on the road, the better chances you have of creating an efficient environment. And then secondly, I think what you end up with is a program that we're able to bring as many clients as possible in for services. And I think that's the ultimate goal. I go back to the barriers that we discovered. One was transportation. Obviously, when you're in the field that we're in, there's a balance. We have to make sure that we're financially sustainable, but we need to get people in for care. And this transportation model, I think after many years of looking at it, I think Tim and his team have done a remarkable job in finding a way to make it efficient.
And as right now, we are providing trips to, there's a lot of things that go in between all that too. There's always a pharmacy visit.
Mm.
That's, they are not getting transportation there. They're also having issues with pharmacy, and that's always turned into a bear because everybody has a different pharmacy and some take 20 minutes and some are ready when you get there. Another reason why being on time is just, it's not practical, but we're driving to doctor visits. We actually host Tuesdays and Fridays, we host AA meetings that we also bring to those, primary care doctor visits, any kind of case management services.
Yeah, I think, and that really zeroes in on the financial side.
Kyle's talking about wanting to take them to the grocery store.
That was going to be my point, is if your listeners look at your regulations, your state regulations on how you bill for services for peer support, community health worker, whatever that may be, I encourage you to look at think outside of the box. I think that's what's happened here, is think outside of the box. And in our state, a peer support specialist can take you to the movie, anything social, the grocery store. Just having that encounter is part of the recovery process, right? Supporting that individual who's in addiction, coming out of addiction and into recovery. That's what peer support specialists do. Community health workers are new, a little bit different on what services you can bill for. But I would just encourage, look at the legislation, look and see what you can bill for.
Just with the time remaining, you talk a bit around just plans moving forward. What are the hopes of what it looks like coming months beyond that?
Well, what we do here is I make this grandiose plan and then I turn it over to Tim and his team to implement it. So
yesterday.
Get it done yesterday. So the plan moving forward is to be able to provide transportation literally on demand for any client who needs services. That's our ultimate goal. Now we're not going to be there tomorrow, but I would like to see out of each of our facilities at least 2 to 3 to maybe 4 vans out in the service area available to clients. And then two, we're expanding at some point to our consortium members. We partner with healthcare facilities who have the same problem that we have. They have missed appointments because there's no way for the patient to get to the clinic. And so we're looking at establishing a private service for those folks. I think that at this point, where we are is we're at the ground level in building this program. But I think we've brought all the pieces. We've tested the market. And we find that we have, as Tim mentioned earlier, 15 to 20% of our patient base on the very front end need the service.
Mm-hmm.
Those are significant things to think about when you contemplate building out a transportation division.
Yeah, it's a little scary since we're expanding into a third location also. But at the same time, you know, that location that Kyle's talking about made me nervous at first. Okay, we're not providing the best transportation service and we're looking at expanding into a third one. But the more I thought about it, that location itself where we're going is, it completes the circle for us. It'll actually make transportation easier for us. Because all three of those zones now, we have a middle spot. So our driver can start in London and finish up in Williamsburg for the rest of his day. So they will be in all three locations all day long, just depending on who's available and what they generate as the best pickup.
Let me give the listeners kind of a mental picture of what that looks like. Each of the facilities are roughly about 30 to 35 miles apart. So if you think about those three facilities, again, 30 miles apart, then you've got a radius around each of those of, let's say, maybe 20 miles, I would think, 15 to 20 miles. And so now you can see the three circles coming together, right?
Visual, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of gives you an indication when we talk about a geographic location. It's a little easier to think about it in terms of miles and distance and what that zone looks like.
Yeah, sure. And those zones, we can scale those zones based on volume too. If we want more volume to come out on, we can adjust that. But it's going to be a lot of research and development still to come, but it's definitely exciting. It's a big project.
Good news for me, when I look at the growth and development of our organization, that research and development is really experience now. So we're actually out on the road every day now, finding out what the problems are, getting back together and finding a solution to meet that problem. And so that's what's exciting, is to see it happening. Okay. A little rough on the front end, as one would imagine, dealing with a client population that isn't always punctual. Okay. It's exciting to see us getting rid of these problems early on.
No, it's all exciting stuff. It'll be great to hear how it all evolves and how you all adapt. So really appreciate you all making the time to come and talk with us today.
Yeah, we would like to get back with you on an update once we get more wheels on the ground here to really show how this has been working out.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll look forward to it. So thank you guys again. For folks tuning in, appreciate you listening, and we'll catch you next time.